This is CliffCentral.com.
Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me.
It's Drake with God's Plan. It's also Monday, the 19th of February. Man, what a world. What a country we live in. Every time you open your eyes, some dramatic changes happen. Something insane. Guptas are on the run. Dudu Sun is being hunted down. A couple of weeks ago, you would have thought this is an impossible scenario, and here it is. It's all happening. It is time for the all-important Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. And here he is, Mr. Justice Malala. It is Monday morning. How are you, Justice?
All good, all good. How are you guys?
You know, I asked you just now, we're good. I asked you just now if you could believe all this news, and you just shook your head and went, South Africa, man.
Nah, you know, so many people after the ANC's December conference and in January after Cyril Ramaphosa's January 6th speech, which was delivered, January 8th speech, which was delivered on January 13th, and people said, you know, it's over, no news anymore. I mean, you now have an ANC president and at the time, not yet president, who does things by the book, you know. It's all straightforward. You can't, right. You can't make it up. So I think what this teaches us is that no, it's South Africa, you know, things happen and they happen fast. You think about just this week. I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but last week, yesterday, Museveni Zwane just got fired, basically. I mean, the mining charter, which has been going around, which is basically a document that was inspired probably written largely in Sachsenwald by the Guptas, has just been stopped. And Cyril Ramaphosa says, I'm dealing with this myself directly with the mining chamber, with communities, with trade unions, and you're out. This is a guy who's been totally intransigent on it the past year. Everyone has told him that investment, mining investment, is rushing out of the country and so forth, and he just hasn't listened to anyone. So you can imagine, I tweeted a picture of him in Parliament looking decidedly uncomfortable on Friday. And I suspect he knew that the axe is about to fall. So when a cabinet reshuffle does come this week, you'll see some very interesting movements. And the first one is that, without a shadow of doubt, Museveni Zwane will be out on the street, out on his ass.
Now, I saw the city press yesterday were saying which ministers they think are going to be fired and which ones will be retained. Do you have any insight into any of this? Are you hearing from your various sources what might be going on?
Everyone has a source on this one. One of the things about social media is that everyone has a list that comes through to them saying, oh yeah, Mabal is going. No, so-and-so is going. No, here's my list and so forth. You know, I've always said, with speculating about cabinet positions, is that we a large chunk of what we're trying to guess at is in Cyril Ramaphosa's head, or in the past in Jacob Zuma's head. But we can tell who are the people who've been fingered in that State of the Nation speech. And so we can speculate happily and merrily because we know who's going. My number one, and I'm sorry about the Free State here, Mabali.
No, you're actually not.
I'm very sorry about it.
Yeah, okay. I was picking on us.
Well, Musbenzi Zwane is from there.
Musbenzi Zwane is from there.
Ace Magashule is from there.
I don't think he's going to make it into cabinet. Anyway, he can't make it into cabinet. He's a full-time staff at Luthuli House. Has to be, although he's still premier of the Free State.
And depending on how the Sistina Dairy Farm investigation goes, he might not even have that job for long.
Ooh, he's being spicy with you, Mabal. Okay, so we know that Museveni Zwane is going to go. Museveni Zwane is going to go. I think that many of the ministers who are implicated in state capture, so let's take Museveni Zwane and the Sistina Dairy Farm. First of all, his office was raided. Mm-hmm. His DG at the time, or head of department, is in the dock.
Right.
all those people who were in court last week are in one or other way connected to him. The Guptas are being hunted down by the Hawks. Even Fikile Mbalula is upside up. What's the expression? Over himself. No, he's not over himself. But he's up in arms, okay? He's up in arms. He's getting the armor beret or whoever to go hunt these people down. So
suddenly Sean Abrams has discovered his conscience.
That one he'll yes, go sir. To.
He's now saying, oh no, we're definitely going after these guys. You know, he's been quiet for how long? And now suddenly he's found a voice.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, by the
okay.
way.
Okay, all right, we'll get back to it.
So here's the thing. I think Msebenzizwane is a goner.
Mm-hmm.
But Thabile Dlamini, Cyril Ramaphosa said in his State of the Nation speech that I will personally ensure that the constitutional court requirements are followed to the letter.
Whew.
Now, you know that, you know, the past 18 months, 24 months, it's been Thabile Dlamini going to court saying, oh, I didn't comply because essentially not complying with what the courts have consistently been telling her. Remember that she had to go to the Constitutional Court for the Constitutional Court to tell her to do her job.
Right.
And that is to pay old people, pensioners, kids without parents, to pay them their social grants. And the contract has remained in the same old company's hands, and this is a company whose contract was found by the same constitutional court to have been invalid and unlawful, and it's just continued. She has made no alternative arrangements. Instead, she's fired people like her former DG Zendango and others. She's fired who was the guy who was the head of the SA Social Security Agency, SASA. The list goes on and on and on. So, but Thabile Dlamini, I think, should be packing up, because I think she's
going. She's not made herself dear and loving in Cyril Ramaphosa's eyes either.
No, she did call, you know, I
she
don't
called
think
him a like wife beater and a whole lot of
yes
things.
Yes, she's over the past 2 years of the campaign, she basically was prepared to do anything, including cast principle to the side, mm-hmm. to ensure that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma becomes
and then there are those ministers who are just useless, like Des van Rooyen and
Des van Rooyen is not useless.
No.
Des van Rooyen is very useful. He's extremely useful. He's a useful idiot. In the 7 days before this idiot went to was appointed finance minister in December 2015. He visited the Gupta family home 7 times. We are not guessing. This is what was in the public protector's state of capture report. When he arrived on the Friday morning, he was appointed as usual in the night by Jacob Zuma.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say, it's going to be, you know, I don't know why I see us going around saying, oh yes, keep the positive spirit. The positive spirit is among us. Can't you see it in this room right now? In this
yes, exactly, Sia.
Sia, let me tell you one thing. You know, there was a time when Mabale would be sitting there at midnight waiting for Jacob Zuma to make an announcement.
Those were tough nights.
Those were tough nights, yeah. My brother. Now we know that announcements will be made in the daytime.
Yeah.
That by 6 o'clock, people will have filed their stories. Mm. People will go home and watch some Isidingo or something like that. You know, what do people watch these days? Generations.
In fact, it wouldn't be so far-fetched to say this is precisely the reason that Peter Ndoro suffered exhaustion.
Exactly.
It's because people were being forced to work until ridiculous hours.
Exactly.
Yes. And this president used to keep us up at night, and he couldn't even arrive in time for the. He didn't even get there on time for his own resignation. I mean, he's unbelievable. So now we'll have someone who works during office hours.
Yes, exactly. You know, where people, you don't have to have like strobe lights or whatever they call them to get pictures of the new ministers.
Right.
This is anyway. So we were on Des Van Rooyen. Des Van Rooyen arrived, one of his, one of the two advisors that he brought with him to National Treasury, sent an email to Trillion Capital and others of those Gupta-linked companies saying, guys, we are in. Let's start looting. Let's start looting. I mean, what was going
now,
on?
Now, if that isn't a hand in the till moment, then I don't know what
it was a total hand in. The man was sent there to sign the corrupt SAA deal, to sign several other deals. That's what he was there for. So that man has to go, boom, out. I don't know what he's been doing. Did you know, by the way, that he's the head of local government's COGTA?
Right.
This is the man who, on his watch, you know that about 75% of your municipalities haven't paid for water.
Uh-huh.
That they
electricity.
Electricity.
They're bankrupt.
Totally. But you know, that's Jacob Zuma's pick
to,
for the
And we
job.
Wanted to put him into finance. I mean, it's just insane. The other one's Faith.
Faith
is still there.
Faith is still there. So you see what the trend is here. We haven't even talked about can any one of these people do the job. No, these people don't do jobs. They arrive and they do things that benefit the Guptas and therefore benefit Duduzani Zuma and therefore benefit Jacob Zuma.
That's it. That's all they were good for.
That's all they were good for. They didn't care about being good at their job. Faith Mutambi sat in a meeting of cabinet and sent an email to Ashu Chawla, the guy who was in charge of the Gupta businesses. He was in court, by the way, last week.
I've got to say, at this point, I'm blown away that she could send an email. I think that's incredible.
She was the Minister of Communications.
I'm amazed. I stand astonished, Justice. Okay. You just said something that broke the bank. Faith Mutambi sent an email during a cabinet meeting.
Okay, I'll concede to you. She dictated it.
Right.
So she sends an email to Ashu Chawla saying, this is what we did and spoke about in cabinet today. Guys, if you're in cabinet, you're not allowed to. She sent an email saying, yeah, so, you know, come on, let's get to work here. So first of all, I think these Gupta-linked idiots should be the ones to go. They should be, it shouldn't even be...
Well, they don't have a whole lot of political capital and currency anymore anyway, so Cyril can easily dispose of them.
No, I mean, what is Museveni's Zizwani going to do? Is he going to mobilize the ANC in the Free State, Shem? Oh.
All right. What about the possibility? Because, you know, when you're appointing a cabinet and there's bound to be a moment in the next couple of days where this is all announced.
Yes.
You're allowed to choose people, first of all, that aren't even in your party. And you are allowed to choose people who are not even politicians and not even MPs. You are allowed to put a medical doctor in for medicine for the health department. You're allowed to put in an accountant into state-owned enterprises. You can do whatever you like.
Yeah.
He can phone Sia right now and say, Sia, I'd like you to be Minister of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. Mm. And Sia can say, sure.
Yeah. Sia, you ready to serve? Tumamina?
Do you get paid to be in the cabinet?
Yes, of course you do. Yeah.
Too much.
Fantastic. I'm ready. I will sign
Didn't you hear us talking about it?
You see, you need there people. You need people like Sia immediately.
Yes.
But Justice, he can do this, right? And I mean, it's unlikely because really cabinet is a reward for cadres, loyal cadres and people who've served him in his election campaign. But it could be that he wants to appoint people on merit. God forbid in our government that should happen, because if you want results, put people with merit in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's complex, but the president can appoint two people who are not members of the National Assembly onto his or her cabinet. I expect that Cyril Ramaphosa will reduce some of the portfolios. So a lot of people will lose their jobs, but a lot less will be appointed. So let's say the Ministry of Communications, talking about Faith Mutambi. So I expect that the Ministry of Communications and the Telecoms Ministry, which is now Siyabonga Gcwele.
They used to be one, and then they were separate.
Exactly. So why was what was that about? We know that Jacob Zuma's daughter went and worked for Siyabonga Gcwele straight out of it. So it could be that some of it was just building mini empires and
maybe it was also just creating jobs for people.
Yeah. So I think that's gonna go. There will be others which will be collapsed and merged, and so there's quite a lot of jobs. We sit with a situation now where there are 74 ministers and deputy ministers. We've got 34 ministers. Under Thabo Mbeki, I think we had 28. Under Nelson Mandela, we had 27. Mm-hmm. And I think that will go, it is likely that we'll go to 30 or below 30. So about four ministries will be collapsed into others. Small business is a big issue for this administration, and Cyril Ramaphosa was very big on it. I'm not sure what happens with Lindiwe Zulu. Zuma liked starting new ministries, and it's interesting for me when he says, these are my achievements, is that he starts something, but he doesn't finish it. So I think Cyril Ramaphosa, there are several things that will be on his mind as he builds a new cabinet. We mustn't be surprised that it's not a cabinet of just the capable, a cabinet of people who are achievers, can do the job and so forth. It will also be a cabinet that thinks about the divisions in the ANC. At the moment, there's no one from KwaZulu-Natal in the ANC top six. Cyril Ramaphosa will want to reward and to send a signal to the KwaZulu-Natal ANC in particular that, right, look, I haven't forgotten you. If you look at yesterday, Zweli Mkhize went to KwaZulu-Natal to speak to ANC structures there to say, look, we got rid of Zuma because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it wasn't like we hate the KZN contingent. That, in my view, is an attempt to... Jacob Zuma has been playing a very dangerous game, and that dangerous game has been to sort of threaten, if you will, the ANC with the possibility of a split, and a possibility of a split that is almost tribal in its character, that KwaZulu-Natal will walk away and the Zulus in. And this is a claim made by the SACP a few weeks ago, that essentially he's saying the Zulus in KZN and Zulus in Gauteng will walk away from the ANC, and the ANC would lose both provinces next year. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the talk from the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal yesterday, they were basically saying they are not happy with the way Zuma was ejected and so forth and so forth. Quite frankly, where were they all this time? In 2008, we had exactly the same situation. I didn't hear them saying, "Are we not happy with the way Thabo Mbeki was ejected?" But anyway, I won't stare that.
There's probably a small element of people who are quite loud about this and they're tribalists. And,
yeah,
you know, it happens.
No, it happens.
I mean, you know, this is identity stuff. And I suppose for some people, it's the most important part of it.
Yeah. And Jacob Zuma has played that card. Played that card.
Well, whenever he's in a corner, he plays whatever cards he can. And usually it's victim stuff.
No, he's this.
By the way, what do you think he's up to? Shouldn't we be watching him a little more closely right now? Because I don't know that this guy, just because he's not the president anymore, that he isn't still a very powerful player, that he doesn't have connections all over the place, and that he isn't being crafty, that he isn't doing something sly in the background, because now we've got less people watching him.
Yes, indeed. But
we should check he doesn't take stuff out of the Union Building.
Jacob Zuma has, if memory serves, he's got 30 days to vacate his house, Mahlamba Ndlovu, and I think the office is already vacated. Thabo Mbeki did it in 2 days. Was out of
talk
the
about
house.
Efficient.
Efficient. Given the slightly larger Zuma household, I suspect there'll be lots of to-ing and fro-ing, as in those cups were mine. No, I brought my own cups. No, these are state cups.
Oh, for sure.
So it could take a little bit longer.
So where's he going to go?
Well, you know, he did build himself a very nice big house in Nkandla. And I don't know of any other residents that. Oh yes, there's the house in Forest Town, which he lived in after he was fired by Thabo Mbeki.
Now here's something bizarre. So he was staying there when Cyril was going back and forth from that horrible hotel in Irene where they always have their meetings.
Yeah.
St. George's Hotel. Cyril was going from there to Forest Town to talk to him. Before his resignation.
No. He was going to Mahlamba Dlovu.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, so just around the corner from...
Because I was going to say, like, why is the president staying in his own crummy house when he could be at the...
No, he was staying... That's why I kept on laughing when apparently he told them, I've already closed the gates. Oh, no, you're the president of South Africa. And if you go to Mahlamba Dlovu, it's a massive... It's the Brentiran estate. It's huge.
And that's enormous.
Yeah. So it can be that the president says, I've closed the gate. There's a cop at the gate. There's cops at the gate, you know? So anyway, so he was seeing him there. What was the point we were making about his departure?
So we've got to watch him and we've got to see where he's going and we've got to keep an eye because obviously we're not finished with him. There's still a lot that we need to sort out that's on the table and there's plenty of charges that need to and probably will now be reinstated and we've got things to do.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, we also need to keep an eye. Where does your son or daughter do when they're running from the law? They'll probably run home. So... You know, Duduzani might pitch up at the family home and maybe might be in the back room being hidden from the cops. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to keep an eye on the family. But I think the key thing now is what does Jacob Zuma do with himself when he got up this morning?
We know what he said. He said he's going to just remain a loyal member of the ANC and go back to kind of rural politics and that sort of thing. But I don't believe him for a second. I think he's got now a lot of money to manage. And he's got relationships that he has built up over time. He even threw this in Cyril's face and said, you know, I need to introduce you to BRICS and to the AU and all of this stuff because I've got such great relationships there. But really, this guy has deals that he made with the Russians. He has deals that he made with the Guptas. He's got deals in the AU that he made that he now can't honor because he's no longer president, right?
Absolutely.
So what happens there?
I was interested that Cyril Ramaphosa did not once say nuclear in his speech on Friday evening.
That's off the table.
And if it's off the table and if... Everything that we've kept on hearing over the past 2 years, that people have been paid money to swing this deal. The fact that a minister like David Mahlobo has been working like a demon to get this thing through by hook or crook. But, you know, he's just been working. He's dedicated the past 5 months to... rewriting the integrated resource plan for energy to basically trying to justify and give legitimacy to this plan. Clearly, surely, there is something going on here. And the big fear is that advance payments were made to a whole bunch of people that this would happen. So with Jacob Zuma gone, it looks like... it's not going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then there are debts to be repaid. Those advance payments need to be reversed. And a lot of people will be in trouble with Russians, with all sorts of people who may have made those payments. So the big thing about where's Jacob Zuma now, I think unraveling some of the shenanigans that went on in his administration is one thing. Picking up monies, clearing out is another thing. But also there's the little matter of the prosecuting agencies and the crime-fighting agencies, which are now finally finding their backbone, trying to find a way to legitimize themselves. And so questions will be asked about how the Guptas got to be so rich and how they got so much access. So he's got to have some lawyers around him. One of the key things that was going on in the negotiations with him was that there were questions about, you know, how much do we pay and how far do we pay? Jacob Zuma is going to be prosecuted for those 783 counts of fraud, racketeering and corruption relating to the Shabir Sheikh charges. This goes back to the early 2000s. He's being fired essentially for what Thabo Mbeki fired him for in 2005. That's one thing. Then you have the Gupta stuff. Then you have the possible Russian collusion stuff. Then you have all sorts of other things.
He's going to have a team of lawyers, and they're going to have to be paid a lot of money to be on guard.
If you think about an advocate and two assistants, a legal team for a day.
And we know this guy's not the best with money.
No. So someone will have to pay. Someone will have to pay.
And now that he's not president, it won't be us anymore.
Will be us.
It will?
It will be us. That is the key thing. If any of the things he is charged with happened while he was president, and if he can argue, and he can, that it was in the course of his duties as the president,
we'll pay.
We are paying. We will pay for his defense in the Shabir Sheikh matter. We will pay for his defense in the Gupta matter.
Just on the whole thing about payment, the story sort of died quickly. The paying back the money, the actual paying back the money, where that other bank home loan agency came forward.
Did they
actually come forward? Has that money come back? Because there was nothing more about that story.
Jacob Zuma claimed that he paid back the money. They say they gave him a loan of about, this was VBS, the very small bank from the former Venda, which has started in the days of the Venda Bantustan. And it sort of morphed and became a bit of a bank. But that bank is interesting for me because it wanted to build a profile for itself. It wanted to break out from being a small, very small bank. I think it had 3 ATMs in Toyando. It wanted to become a national bank. And part of the strategy behind backing Jacob Zuma's 8.4 million rand loan was to put itself on the national map. I don't know if that was good marketing or was bad marketing, but there's a line in marketing where they say no publicity is bad publicity. We don't know the machinations of that loan. I don't know if he's repaying every month. You know that he will continue to get his full salary, which is 2.9 million rand a year. So that's about, 200K plus.
That's criminal.
Forever and ever, amen.
Yes.
Wow.
Unless he's found guilty on some horrific, egregious offense, then I think an application can be made that he abused his office and so shouldn't get it. But that is why the ANC and Ramaphosa kept on saying, look, if you don't do this, we will impeach you. And if you get impeached, zonked, nothing, all of it goes.
Yeah.
So now he gets the salary, he gets an office, he gets an two assistants, he gets... if he sets up a foundation, he gets people who are paid for. He gets protection, security guards and so forth. Yeah, it's all good.
Standard president package.
Yeah. No, he left. He resigned. So he left with all the perks. That's why he was very insistent in his resignation letter. That I never wanted these perks and
but he's taking them.
But he's taking them.
Sure.
He's definitely taking them. Plus, he gets his entire pension. Remember that out of that 2. Whatever million, part of it he was getting a state pension, a very generous one. And that also goes with him. That should make for a bit of a... He's been president for 10 years. And
it's a lot.
Yeah.
But he had a foundation, but it went broke last year.
Yes. Well, now
wasn't Dudu Mieni in charge of it as well?
Yes, Dudu Mieni was in charge of that foundation.
Is there a country in the world, to your knowledge, that doesn't offer a standard president package once the guys exit? Or is that a global practice?
It's a global practice. There have been instances where millionaires have made it into the presidential office and then afterwards said, no, I don't need it.
We don't want it, yeah.
So in the city of New York, I think Bloomberg, he said, I don't want to be paid. Yeah. And
it applies to mayors too, not just presidents.
Yeah, most of these are standard across. So you're paying for a lot of people.
Sure. What, guys? We're paying for a lot of people, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, but can I just, because we've only got you for a few more minutes, and I want to find out who you think are likely to be the outsiders who are suddenly brought back in to cabinet. And some of them might be people who've been there before, and some of them might be people we've never heard from before, because there's a lot of rumor and speculation going on at the moment. Any of it worth commenting on?
Look, I think there's been a lot of speculation about Pravin Gordhan and his possible return to the state-owned enterprises portfolio. He's been a marvel to watch in the parliamentary inquiry into Eskom. Mm. He's the guy between him and Natasha Matsone. They get the guys really shaking with fear. So I suspect he might be going back. I feel that Pravin Gordhan felt that he was taken out when he was really making a contribution.
And we know he's a public servant through and through.
Yeah.
He's a real dyed-in-the-wool bureaucrat. He's one of those people who wants to be involved in government. This is what he does the best.
Absolutely. So I think it's possible that he will go back.
And if he runs state-owned enterprises, then they'll be held to a new level of... I was just thinking about how those people in those boards must feel now. And they have already changed in some places, like the SABC. But suddenly there's a new broom, and they're going to be sweeping extra clean now because they've seen how much of the filth has been outed, right?
Mm. No, absolutely. You know, if he goes back, or whoever goes back and becomes state-owned enterprises, it's funny how... when it's bad, it's really bad. But when it's good, so Ben just spoke about Dudu Mieni. Dudu Mieni was horrific as the chair of SAA. On her watch, that business just basically, it's a wonder that the planes don't fall out the sky, didn't fall out the sky under Dudu Mieni. But look at what, in just 3 weeks at Eskom, Cyril Ramaphosa announces that Jabu Mabuza will become the chair of the board. He goes and appoints a guy called Phakamani Hadebe, who is glorious. This guy used to work for Trevor Manuel at National Treasury. Phakamani Hadebe gets moved from National Treasury to go and sort out the problems at the land bank. This is in 2008. He arrives, he fires virtually the entire executive, lays criminal charges against some of them. You know, 3 weeks ago in the commercial crimes court in Tshwane, four of those people were found guilty and sentenced to prison terms. That's 10 years later.
Wow.
But in the interim, Phakamani Hadebe had turned the land bank around. It went from being subsidized by government to making profit of 500 million rand per annum. He left. He went to Absa Capital. He was one of the top bankers there. And now he's the acting CEO at Eskom. He knew that Eskom had a problem with cash. And the first thing he does is go to the PIC. He says, look, I'm in charge now, but I can't run this thing while there's a cash crunch looming. Will you give me a 5 billion rand
loan,
and this is how I'm going to pay for it. In just 3 weeks, he's turned things around. And you know what? Last Thursday, Matsela Koko resigned. Something that he'd vowed he won't do, Matsela Koko resigned. And I think that's the beginning of the clear up. It became clear to him that Phakamani Hadebe doesn't want me here. And I'm sure Phakamani Hadebe told him, guy, it's time for you to jump. So I think that that's the kind of thing that will happen at many of the other SOEs. And I don't know if Pravin will be the one, but I think we're going to see that sort of thing happening in a Ramaphosa administration. You know, the big question is what happens with Malusi Gigaba. Malusi Gigaba was the guy who appointed some of those Eskom boards, Transnet, many of the other boards.
Yeah, and certainly aided and abetted what is called state capture.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So he's got a lot to answer for.
So the question will be whether Ramaphosa thinks he can be rehabilitated. I'm one of those people who believes that Ramaphosa doesn't want to clear out everyone who was against him. So he needs to show that he's a unity guy. So people like Malusi might stay. He might not stay in finance, but I think he might stay. So you know, we mustn't expect Ramaphosa to give us a shiny, brand new cabinet. There will be some dodgy people. Maybe not 100% dodgy, but there will be some people viewed as Nkosazana people, who might be seen as Zuma people still in there. Because
those will be legacy appointments.
These are legacy appointments. It's
right.
Yeah, it's not as clear cut. Can I just say, you know, we're all on a roll and it's all happy and it's a new dawn and so forth. And I agree, you know, it's Tuma Mina, send me now. I want to do this. I mean, on Friday, the mood in my house where I was, oh God, I'm going to work for government. Give me the forms. Let me fill them in. Everyone wanted to be called to do something. But I couldn't help. You know, I felt very sad. Mtutuzi Manana, who used to be the higher education deputy minister,
right?
Who also beat up a woman and was convicted. This is the guy who beat up a woman at the club here in Joburg. One of those Cubanas, I think it was. I saw him prancing into parliament in his brown suit on the red carpet, stopping to be photographed. This is a man who beat up a woman in a nightclub with people around, and then went to the Randburg Magistrates Court, was convicted. So he's a convicted woman batterer. And not once, but twice. In December, he was elected onto the ANC's National Executive Committee. Yesterday, Friday, he was prancing into Parliament, you know, being all kind of like, oh, I'm a hero and stuff. And I sometimes, you know, I'm one of those people who, and this is what I've been saying the past 8 weeks, that the Cyril Ramaphosa moment is a fantastic moment, it's great and so forth and so forth. But I see people like that and I think, wow, is this the ANC? Really? How can the ANC keep this guy as an MP of the ANC? He was in. He was sitting next to Butimana Mela in Parliament. I mean, I think if the ANC is serious about all this stuff it says about gender, about abuse and so forth, this man should not be an ANC MP. He should not have been voted. He should not have been allowed to stand for a position on the National Executive Committee of the ANC. So, you know, I'm all positive and all that, but I do wonder, really, about a movement that allows that sort of thing and this sort of person to be part of it.
So a caution from you at the end of all of this euphoria.
Yes, please. Sometimes Julius Malema says stuff, but he says it's not about Jacob Zuma, it's not about Cyril Ramaphosa, it's about the ANC. It's rotten inside, and I saw that picture. And I said, maybe it's not rotten inside, but there is definitely...
there's some stinking areas.
Yes, and that is one of them. It just left such a bitter taste in my mouth. I hated it.
Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Let's look forward to some announcements in the daytime of a cabinet reshuffle.
Ooh, ooh.
Maybe after the budget speech. I think that it might not happen before. But in the daytime.
All right.
In the daytime.
Justice Malala, The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. Next up, Rich Mulholland. That's coming up next. That's the thing you want to hear on a Monday, especially when you need something to pep you up. Reality check. It's Dua Lipa with I Don't Give a Fuck.
Dua Lipa?
Dua Lipa.
That's
D-U-A.
What gymnasts do.
D-U-A-L-I-P-A. All right, let's hurry up and get straight to Rich Mulholland. Hey, it's like there's a problem there, Sia. What's going on? We're going to get to Rich Mulholland in the reality check in just a second. Oh, let me remind you, we're going to be live at the Lifestyle Home Garden Center on Friday with the Just Now Comedy Podcast, Sex Talk, Casper Radio Show, The O'Neill Africa Experience, and Millennial Gen. And there'll be some special broadcasts from me and Kelman at the Lifestyle Home and Garden Center. And you need to go and check it out and say hello and come and pop in and talk to us. We can all have a drink together, check the place out. It's very exciting.
And you can ask John Tissot any risque question that you want. He will...
Yes.
Handle it.
I'll add some soft caution to that. He really will answer it.
Yeah.
just be careful what you wish for when it comes to John T's advice.
All right, Rich, good morning. How are you, sir? Oh, hello?
Uh-oh.
What's going on there, Sia? I'm getting all these funny Skype noises out of Rich Mulholland. Is there a problem? Like 8 minutes to talk. Hey, Rich, are you there?
I am. How's it going?
Good, man. Nice to speak to you. I feel like I haven't spoken to you in ages.
Yeah, for sure. How was your trip?
Great. Very, very good. I saw you and Ben get into an argument. Apparently, Gary Player is the most arrogant person you've ever spoken to.
Yeah, sure. It was crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. I couldn't believe how stuck up. It was more from a professional point of view. We were doing some kind of shoot, and we had to film him for the launch of one of his properties.
When was this?
And actually, this was years ago. And their client insisted that I do the interview myself. So I had to... They actually got a helicopter and they flew me up to the palace and I had to interview him there.
Uh-huh.
And we had a camera guy. And I'm standing, get set up and say, hello, how are you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there talking to him and he was just rude from start to finish. And then this guy behind dropped a plate and I turned around just to see what was happening. I actually just said to him, please keep it down. He said, don't you ever, ever lose eye contact with me again.
Wow.
And I was just so taken aback and I thought, wow. And we have a big sign on the door. It says, no assholes allowed. And it says in brackets, clients or staff. And I kind of had that no asshole rule. So we decided never to work with the guy again.
Yeah, but Rich, what did you have for breakfast that day?
You know, I have no idea.
You probably had bacon and he smelt on your breath and he was like, oh, of course, they'd set me up with this guy.
The filthy pig eater. I know. Yeah. It must have been that.
It must have been that because you're the only person who's ever said anything bad about Mr. Gary Player. Ever.
I know. The guy's otherwise a saint. In fact, I came back and I questioned myself and my life decisions.
Well, that's good.
I realized that he must be amazing. So it must just be me.
It must have been. All right. So, Rich, Monday morning, you get us off to a good start. Reality check. What's on your mind today?
Well, so it's a continuation of a discussion from a few weeks ago that you kind of weren't here for. This was when we were talking about getting offended on behalf of other people. Mm-hmm. I find it very condescending. If somebody's, you know, I'm offended on behalf of this Asian woman because she can't defend herself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that really bothers me.
Yeah, it's these self-appointed, self-righteous busybodies. Yeah.
In fact, it's more condescending than anything that, you know, a bigot would ever do.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually saying, no, hold on, you know, I've got this, you stand back, little poor person, and I'll stand up and fight for you.
Right.
However, this week I want to talk about getting offended yourself, which is something that we should have more control over. You know, a few weeks ago, and it's amazing to me how people get offended about talking to them about getting offended. A few weeks ago, I wrote a tweet and it said, remember, kids, getting offended doesn't actually hurt you unless you want it to. Offense is generally taken, not given. Act under this assumption and you'll live a happier life.
Right.
So I get a following reply from somebody. Remember, kids, you don't have to worry about your words and actions affect other people because you're a big boy winner man who's always right. And I thought, okay, that escalated quickly.
Was that Gary Player again?
Yeah, it was just amazing to me. The daftest thing about the reply was that they were acting as if I was referring to giving offense when I was talking about taking it. So I wasn't saying that it's okay to give offense. I was saying it's okay not to take it. Just decide not to. It's really, really easy as a kind of decision.
What a strange reaction. I have to question, like, someone who jumps to and gets defensive like that immediately.
Well, I thought the irony was that I was talking about choosing not to be offended by something.
Yeah.
The person was offended by that and decided to offend me in return.
Mm-hmm. Very odd.
So it was an attack. I didn't really get it. What amazed me was a lot of people liked that. Like, they were like, yeah, cool, absolutely. You mustn't, you know, we must be offended by stuff. It's important to be offended by things. And again, I don't think the idea of what I'm trying to explain to people here is not that they shouldn't be offensive, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't worry about offending people. It's more on the other side when you're on the receiving end. There's a decision that happens where you decide, oh, am I going to be bothered by this or not? And I'm suggesting that you should decide not to. Offense cannot be properly given. It can only be properly taken. It can be offered out there, and you can decide whether you want to accept it or not. And I think I have a much happier life because, for the most part, I get offended a whole lot less.
Well, I've found in my very limited experience of this discussion around offense that the people who like to be offended, who make it an important part of their day, really usually don't have terribly much else going on. And it for them gives them meaning. It's almost like those people whose lives are terrifically boring, they watch soap operas in order to make their life seem interesting by comparison. You know, these ordinary things that happen suddenly take on a dramatic kind of overtone. And it makes them feel special. It makes them feel important. It makes them feel wanted and necessary. And being offended means you are something. And it gives you a reason to exist. And for a lot of people who are online on social media, for example, they don't have a purpose, really. They waft from one issue to another. And getting emotive about something that actually doesn't affect them makes them feel special.
Right. Being offended is like being affected. I think you spot on there. And if you're affected, you can have an opinion. And I think a lot of people, and I've actually said this on the slot before, that a lot of people are just kind of upset that they missed the revolution. You know, yeah. Like we're in a relatively good place at the moment and things are happening. And so but you want to be angry about something. And there's lots of people that have spoken out about this. I mean, Stephen Fry, I think it was, he said, it's now very common to hear people say, I'm rather offended by that, as if it gives them certain rights. It's actually nothing more than a whine. I find that offensive. It has no meaning. It has no purpose. It has no reason to be respected as a phrase. I'm offended by that. Well, so fucking what? I mean, that's Stephen Fry. I mean, so what? So what if you're offended? What is the purpose of this? And then you can go back a bit further. I'm quite a big into reading the Stoics and things. Mm-hmm. Marcus Aurelius, he said, when people injure you, ask yourself what good or harm they thought would come of it. If you have understood that, you will feel sympathy rather than outrage or anger. Your sense of good and evil may be the same as theirs or near it, in which case you have to excuse them. Or your sense of good and evil may differ from theirs, in which case they are misguided and deserve compassion. Is that so hard? Like, there's a whole different choice of response we can choose to take when somebody offends us. But the default is injury and counterattack. And sometimes it's not even injury. It's counterattack and feigned injury. Most people getting offended are like football players rolling around. They're trying to draw a penalty, right? They're trying to call foul, and they're rolling around on the floor acting like they're in pain. But actually, there's no pain. And you know that because the second they leave social media, they jump out and they get a sandwich. Like, they're totally happy with these things. This taking offense is the equivalent of rolling around on the floor trying to call a penalty and draw a penalty for your side. And I think it's bullshit. I think we need to be tougher and we need to learn to battle through.
I love it. All right. That's something cool to think about. That's something to chew on. Thank you, Rich.
Fantastic, yeah. Guys.
Have a good week.
Awesome. I'm away next week. I'm snowboarding, but I'll see you, I think, the week after.
All right, dude. Thank you. There we go.
Awesome. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Rich Mulholland, The Reality Check, Mondays. He's so right. In this case, I mean, I couldn't agree with him more. And it's become a thing that people do. It's like something to do. Oh, what are you doing this weekend? I'm going to go and drink with my friends. What are you doing on social media this week? Oh, I'm going to get offended. That's what I'm here to do. It's 8 o'clock, and it's time for us to get to the unnews, and we'll have our interview for this morning. Cyril Ramaphosa is all over the news this week and will continue to be, so stick around for all the updates on that. We've got a bunch of terrific shows for you, as always, on a Monday on cliffcentral.com. So it's all happening right here. You don't need to go anywhere else. Cyril is not on the Seapoint Promenade this morning. Hundreds of Cape Tonians had gathered to hopefully have a morning run with him, but he has shit to do now that he's officially the president of South Africa. Musi Maimane and the DA social media team is there in his place, though, but nobody seemed to notice. Jacob Zuma has 30 days to vacate his state residence and office, though he is in no rush. A Russian moving company has already offered their services, and for free. Putin put out movers have already started to assemble outside the residence, but curiously, nobody's got out of the trucks, and the ex-president's security won't go near them either. Donald Trump has applauded Fergie's rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. He said that finally an anthem was sung with nobody sitting down. But it is rather difficult to sit down when you're running for cover, as Fergie shrieked the verses out, one after another. Some people's ears bled. It was a disaster. All right. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9, live right here on cliffcentral.com. Sia will not be here, though. He's on holiday.
Oh, that's a yay in. I won't even ask why, but I'll see you guys on in 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you, Sia. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Very nice.
This is cliffcentral.com.